acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 16, Deja Voodoo, November 17, 2013. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode are located on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. This week I heard from new listeners, V. Demilia, Sun 84, Grandma Tutu, Uno 427, Jill, who is Color Notes Jill, and B-Wing. Another 5-star rating appeared on iTunes, and I'm very thankful for that. And finally, I heard from two listeners who were on the main retreat with the Knitting Pipeline group. This past week, a group of knitters went on a retreat with Paula from Knitting Pipeline. They toured yarn shops and yarn mills and had all kinds of adventures in Maine. Even though I couldn't attend the retreat, it's something that I longed to do, but my work schedule would not allow me to attend. I had contacted Paula and asked if I could send along something for a door prize and also some little goodies for everyone who was participating in the retreat. So I sent some things along, and this week I heard back from Chessie, who is Dolores from Michigan, and Cynthia, who is CLFN on Ravelry. They both commented on the goodies and said thank you. I'd like to say hello to all of the main retreaters who may have heard about Yarns at Yin Hu at the retreat, and to send out well wishes and prayers of support for the folks in Washington, Illinois, because I heard today that some very strong tornadoes have gone through the area all around Peoria, Illinois. And my heart goes out to everyone there, hoping that their families are healthy and safe this evening. There are currently a contest and a poll on the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry. You can enter for a chance to win one skein of Patricia's lovely fingering weight yarn in the Cactus Bloom colorway. That's from BZB Fibers. All you have to do is reply to the thread with your favorite side dish for the harvest season. There's also a poll inviting listeners to chime in about the number of people you will be crafting for this holiday season. Join the group and join in the conversation. I love to hear from listeners and receive feedback about the show. This week's episode features segments titled The Back Porch, The Front Porch, and Gratitude Journal. The Back Porch. This week I finished my second Oak Trail hat. It's a pattern by Alana Dacos, and it's found in her book Botanical Knits. I would like to knit nearly every pattern in this book, and I also hope to knit my first sweater this winter from this book. The Oak Trail hat is a cloche. It's a very chic and stylish, but rather simple pattern with a very interesting construction. And knitting it for the second time, it went so much more quickly than when I knit it this summer when I first purchased the book. I used Barocco Vintage. It's a worsted weight yarn in the Breezeway color. And the cloche is knit by starting on straight needles. I used US size 6, just as the pattern called for. And you knit a long strip, and then you join the strip and begin knitting in the round. The hat has a small set-in panel with an oak leaf in it that's in wonderful relief to the stockinette stitch of the rest of the hat. For minimal effort, it looks truly stunning. When you begin knitting in the round, you switch from straight needles to circular needles. And then when you're nearly done with the hat and you've done a lot of decreasing toward the top, you switch to DPNs or double pointed needles. Every time I've knit something for the second time, I feel a sense of having learned a lot about the pattern. Being able to read a pattern and read a chart is going much more easily for me now. But just like with cooking, I can't seem to resist when it's my second time knitting a pattern that I make some kind of change or alteration. This time, the change was very small. It's a very small detail that I changed, which is that I knit a small eye cord or a small little knitted cord at the very end of the pattern and then sewed it in like a little bobble or a little knob at the top of the hat. This was a feature that I learned from knitting another hat in this book, and I really like the way that finished off. I think I'm going to call this syndrome of knitting something for a second or maybe a third time deja voodoo, because it feels like deja vu. Everything seems easier when you're doing it for the second time, yet you can't resist to pull some kind of manipulation on the pattern, the yarn, the needle size. Your creative spirit can't help but creep in. It's kind of like Sally Snyder talks about on her blog, The Improvised Life. I think there's something about our creative selves that takes over when we're relieved of the stress or the anxiety, or maybe not, it's not as severe as that. We're relieved of the exertion of doing something for the first time. Our brains are so driven to creative thought and inventive behavior that we can't help but bring in something new when the activity we're doing becomes easier. I think this would be a fascinating idea for a knit along, don't you? It could be a deja voodoo knit along where everyone selects a pattern that they've already knit. And if you're anything like me, as soon as you finish the pattern, you're thinking, if I knit this again, I would change this, or I don't really like how this came out. So we could knit a pattern for a second or maybe a third time and then be very clear about the changes we make. I think I'm going to try that. On the front porch are a few things that I'm really looking forward to. And one is something you could join in if you find it as interesting as I do. Dr. Kelly, who's Chris on the U University podcast, is hosting a pen pal pair-up project. She's not really hosting it. I think she's being like the pen pal matchmaker. On the U University group page on Ravelry, Dr. Kelly has a questionnaire that you fill out with some personal information about yourself. The deadline for this is November 22nd. So get on over there, join the group, and sign up for a pen pal if you're interested. When Dr. Kelly has all of the questionnaires submitted, she'll take about a week, she said, to pair people up based on their interests and based on what they're looking for in a pen pal. Then she'll give you the information about your pen pal, and then off you go. You have to pledge that you will be a diligent pen pal, which I think that's great. You have to make an effort to communicate by writing, by old-fashioned snail mail, with someone you don't know, but you already know shares some of your interests. I've heard her talk about this for a few podcasts, and I don't know what took me so long to fill out this questionnaire and sign up, because now that I have, I can't wait to find out who my pen pal is. Also this week, I have a trip to Boston. As I've said in a couple previous episodes, I think, I'm a member of the National Writing Project. Specifically, I'm the co-director of internal relations at the National Writing Project at Rutgers University. It sounds really fancy, but it's just a very fancy way of saying that I try to attract new people to our site and come up with programming ideas that will sustain them as teachers and as writers while they spend time with our site. Like a knitting retreat would be, a National Writing Project conference is a time of renewal and celebration and exchange of ideas. This is all happening in Boston because wherever the National Council of Teachers of English conference is held each year, the National Writing Project has its own conference in the same city, usually in an adjacent hotel or conference center. So I'm going up with some of my colleagues from the National Writing Project. I'm looking forward to meeting some people from other sites. People attend from all around the country and all around the world. We typically have at least a few international folks coming. And being that this is such an easy to reach location for internationals because they can fly into Boston, I expect that we'll have quite a few. The mission of the National Writing Project, by the way, is to help the nation's teachers become better teachers of writing. And the way we do that is to encourage teachers to see themselves as writers and to take the information they have about what makes good writing and what makes effective writing practice and turn that into instruction, very powerful instruction that they can use with their students. This is an intense and an exhausting kind of undertaking because what happens in students' minds when they write and all of the external factors that you need to take into consideration when you're instructing a group of young people and trying to show them how to write well, the possibilities are just limitless in terms of what you have to consider and what you need to be sensitive to. And so the conference is very important because people from all different kinds of school systems are able to share their ideas. And you can meet people who are eager to express how they have found success with a particular population of students. So some things, for example, might work better with students in urban areas, in rural areas, in different kinds of communities of learners. I'm really looking forward to the conference. I haven't attended a conference in 2 years. I missed last year's conference, which was held in Las Vegas. The last one I went to was in Chicago. So I'm looking forward to meeting old friends and making new friends. Part of what I need to pack and plan for is a portable knitting project that I can work on during the conference or during downtime, hotel time. I'm thinking of taking the Sockhead Hat by Kelly McClure. At Rhinebeck, I purchased some mill ends of Socks That Rock in the Rare Gems color. It's exciting yarn, so I think using exciting yarn with a simple pattern is a good way to keep your mind occupied. And I'm not a good enough knitter where I could follow a pattern or do anything at all tricky or finicky while I'm listening to presentations or even while I have downtime, because all of that socialization and exchange of ideas wears down an introvert like me. So I need something simple and straightforward that's nevertheless interesting to work on. And we'll see if I can make some headway on a Sockhead Hat. I do plan to cast it on before I leave so that I'm already in full gear on the ribbing section before I'm trying to divide my attention and follow along with the presentation. I think my deja vu on this project, since this will be the second time that I'm knitting it, will be to follow the pattern. Because the first time I knit this, I did 9 inches of ribbing and then about 4 inches of stockinette. I did this because Amy of Knitting in Circles podcast said that that's how she would do it if she were to knit the pattern again. So I just started off my first time on the pattern taking Amy's suggestion. And now I think to work a little voodoo on it, I will actually follow the pattern as written. I've just been thinking that I've tossed around this term voodoo a couple of times now in the podcast. And by voodoo, I mean a very general approach to this idea of exerting your own charm, your own individuality, putting your own stamp on a project. I think there is something very spiritual about creating a knitted item, particularly a garment that you would wear, that you would wrap around you or give as a gift for someone else to wear, that part of who you are and what you believe and how much you care for the person is all wrapped up in that handmade project. So I don't mean to raise any eyebrows with this term. I think deja voodoo is just kind of a fun thing to say in the way it rolls off the tongue. And also because there's this very general notion about an urge to change something a little bit from the original as a kind of powerful charm. In my gratitude journal this week, I'd like to thank all of the members of the Yarns at Yin Hu audience. This journey started in August. It's something I had thought about for a very long time before I launched the podcast, and I'm overwhelmed by how well it's been received and by all of the kind words and comments that have come in from listeners. It's rather overwhelming, and sometimes it's almost uncomfortable, yet in a very pleasant way. So I'd like to take the time to be very specific in my thanks and also to make some comments about my vision for the podcast and some goals that I have. This is the 16th episode, and I feel like I'm in the swing of having a podcast. I'm still a beginner in many ways, but the rhythm and the demands of having a podcast and the energy output are becoming more regular for me. It's something that I can manage, and it's changing the way I think, in that everything I do, I'm always thinking about how that might play into the podcast or how I might use that as a jumping off point for an episode. So I'm really in the rhythm of having a podcast, and it's starting to feel very real for me. I wrote down a few goals in August when I began the podcast of where I would like to be in 1 year. So I feel confident in sharing those with you, not because I feel overconfident that I'm going to reach those goals, but I feel like I'm on my way to reaching those goals. I plan to record 45 episodes in the year. That gives me a few weeks when I might not have any new material or I might be busy with other things and hold off the podcast for a week. I would like to have 500 members in my audience. So far, I've had members on both Facebook and on Ravelry, and I have a lot of non-knitters in the audience. So I intend to think of things that will accommodate all kinds of listeners. I would also like to have 25 reviews or star ratings or a combination thereof on iTunes by putting out good programming that inspires people to make a comment on iTunes. And when I reach 200 to 250 Ravelry members in the group, I would like to host a knit along. I want a knit along to be effective and successful, and I feel like beginning that when the group is very small might not be such an effective way to get it started. So I have a lot of ideas for knit alongs, and when I reach 200 or 250 members or so, I think that's the time to launch the first one. Currently, there are 107 members on the Ravelry group, 123 likes on the Yarns at Yinhu Facebook page, for a total of 228 members of the audience, and 7 reviews on iTunes and 4 other 5-star reviews, bringing that total to 11. In order to express my gratitude for listeners this week, I will take the time to address a few questions that have come in via Facebook and Ravelry. The 3 main areas that I receive questions about have been: how do you find the time? How do you find the money? And what about this whole post-apocalyptic theme? So I'll try to be brief and address all 3 of those. I work full-time for a high school district in New Jersey, and my specific job there is to be the gifted and talented coordinator. This takes a lot of time, and the way to do all of the crafting and creative work that I like to achieve, as well as hosting the podcast now, requires a great deal of organizational skill. For me, that's the secret of having time to do the things I want to do and not just the things that I need to do. It comes down to organization. One of my mentors when I began teaching is a man named Dr. Thomas Smock. He wasn't Dr. Smock when I met him, but he's since become Dr. Smock. He had really great insights about what it meant to be a teacher and what it meant, more importantly, to be an effective teacher. One of the things he told me is that great teachers work very hard to make it look very easy. And in my 17 years of experience as an educator, I have come to find that is true. At least it's true for me. I spend a great deal of energy and attention on organizational tasks. And what that allows me to do is manage my time in a way that suits me and reduce my feelings of anxiety or frustration in terms of scheduling or accomplishing just the myriad tasks I need to do each day. The same is true at home. I keep my home and my personal belongings incredibly organized, sometimes to the dismay of others, but it works for me because when I'm ready to do something I enjoy doing, everything's there for me and I don't spend time looking for things or trying to pick up after myself. These things have become habits for me. In terms of finding the money for a hobby that can be expensive if you like high quality materials and supplies like I do, my way of approaching this is that with all the time I spend knitting, spinning, weaving, crocheting, if all of those projects were for me, they would overwhelm me. I don't have room in my closets or occasions in my life to wear that many handcrafted things. So what I do is spend money on yarn and other supplies and fiber now that I'm spinning, and create gifts for people, particularly around the holidays. That way, my holiday budget is very small because I've spent all year buying supplies and making homemade items that then I can give as gifts around the holidays. It keeps me happy because I'm working with the materials that I enjoy, and I'm working with a variety of different colors and styles because I like to go outside my own comfort zone or experiment with things that I wouldn't particularly like to wear, but I know that they might suit another person. So that's my strategy for managing a budget in terms of knitting. I guess I also have a very small house. Yinhu is 850 square feet, and I do live here with another person. We need to share our space because he also has hobbies and belongings and things he wants to have. I don't have room or the inclination for some gigantic stash. And since I really do enjoy purchasing things, I like to be able to purchase something when I'm starting a new project and not feel like, well, I really have to use something I already have because I already have all of this yarn. I have some things on hand and I will occasionally pull from stash, but when I imagine a project, I'm often purchasing the yarn or the fiber for that project and then beginning it. For me, that's part of the fun. Finally, I'll address some questions about this post-apocalyptic theme. I think I've mentioned before that we try to be frugal at Yinhu. This came into play around this time last year when we were under the influence of Hurricane Sandy. We lost power in this area for about a week, and Samuel and I decided to stick it out in our house because we have a pretty phenomenal Riverstone fireplace. We didn't have to work because school was called off for both of us, so we didn't have anywhere we had to be. We didn't have to dress to impress, and we didn't have any major damage to our home, so we felt incredibly fortunate. We didn't think it was necessary to spend time at the home of family members or to try to get a hotel. We decided to stick it out here. And our one excursion each day would be to go into town to the local Starbucks, where we would get some hot coffee and we would charge our phones and sometimes our laptops, and we had a means of communicating with everyone and getting the news from outside. When we came home here, we would be reading. I would be sometimes knitting by the light of a headlamp, and I was posting some photos of my projects that I was working on. And these got a lot of comments from people we knew, one of which was something about, oh, I would really want you on my team in the event of an apocalypse. This stuck with me and became a way for me to frame the show. It's not a religious reference. It's rather tongue-in-cheek and something that I feel can hold all of the different elements of the show together. Because in general, I'm interested in activities that go back to the basics and go back to understanding how things are made and where things come from, and a very firm belief that engaging intellectually and in a tactile fashion in how we take care of ourselves is a very important factor in overall health and well-being and a feeling of satisfaction in life.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. You can also join the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry or like the show's Facebook page. The music in today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Chris DeLong and Cesar Diaz. Stay strong and eat well as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a
nitrogen. Yes, it's a way nitrogen. Yes, a modified nitrogen. Yes, a modified nitrogen. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, but I don't know why. It's a subway nitrogen. It's a subway nitrogen. It's a modified nitrogen. It's a modified nitrogen. Nature's ever get you high till your face is mine. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.